Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 44. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Metachlorians. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by... I know, right? I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello, everyone!
You're awake, all right. And we have Eric joining us this week.
Hey, everybody.
That was a little delayed.
It was. I was going to be like, new phone, who dis?
Who's this?
You know, I wonder if there's a lag. This is going to be the episode that every listener hates.
Well, I like Metachlorians. Well, just maybe not. If you want to get involved in the conversation, we can't even get through the intro. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. Now, I have to tell you guys something. I did something with Audible the other day that I've never done before, and I was kind of blown away. I decided to get the Audible Rogue One book. Because, you know, I already had the audiobook of, you know, Catalyst, and, you know, I had the, you know, I already had the, you know, ebook of Rogue One and everything. And I was just like, okay, you know, I'm about halfway through the Rogue One book. I've seen the movie 4 times now and everything. And I was like, I'm doing construction. I might as well listen to the book, you know, and kind of help me. Well, because I have a Kindle account and I have an Audible account, it was able to keep my Kindle up to date where I was reading at. Like, it synced. I guess it's called WhisperSync. Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I feel like I should just sit there with my headphones on the couch and, like, have it read to me like a little kid. So, apparently, if you have a Kindle and you have an Audible account, because they're all owned by Amazon, they synchronize. So, this is pretty cool. Just so you guys know, if you don't know.
That is both incredibly cool and also slightly creepy.
But, like, think about it, like, I can sit there. I feel like I'm like the audiobook plays back a little bit slower than I read. Okay, a lot slower than I read, but still, it's pretty cool to hear the voices and all the things. But, like, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like, because I was working out, you know, I was doing construction, building, you know, my kitchen and everything today. And I went to pick up my Kindle right before we get started the show. And I'm like, hey, it says, you listened to the audiobook, you know, this far. Would you like to, you know, synchronize? I said, yes. And it instantly took me to right where I paused the audiobook.
That's amazing. See, it's so hard to find that, actually. When you, like, if you ever made the switch to an audiobook from an ebook or from a book, it's hard to find.
Yeah, to try to find where you left off at, right?
Especially if you're mid-chapter, but sometimes even if you're not, especially if you're, like, on really old-school, like, CDs and stuff. So I think it's pretty cool. It's obviously a feature you can disable. You could have just said no.
And just continue to read and stuff, but...
I want to spend ages flicking through this book.
Ages flicking through to find, yeah, exactly.
So if you want to be cool like Mikey, definitely try out the free Audible trial from us at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. And you can buy a Kindle through our website, even on our Amazon links.
Funny.
I also have an old Kindle if anyone wants to buy it for cheap, because I have an extra
one. You know, I have to ask, Mikey, what kind of headphones were you listening on that you could hear an audiobook, spoken word, while you were tearing up your kitchen?
I was using my Beats. I have the Power Beats, the in-ear ones, the ones you use for working
out. Can you
buy
Beats on the Resistance Radio website?
Probably through the website. I don't know.
If you go through an Amazon affiliate link, then I'm sure
you can. Yeah, you can go through the Amazon affiliate link. Give us, you know, help Danya come to the U.S. also, really cool, is I got an email about someone. Apparently, I forgot to update the website when the sale for holiday ended, and it still said it was on sale, but then when you try to buy it, it went back to the original price of $20 for the t-shirts. But you know what? After looking at it and getting that email, I decided, you know what? Let's just make the t-shirts permanently on sale. So now our t-shirts are $10 a piece. So check them out. We have merch on our website. I decided
Happy
to do that
Life
today.
Day.
I know, right?
Yay.
Extended Life Day. Woo!
Sounds slightly more enthusiastic there, Eric.
Yay, Happy Life Day.
Oh, gosh. The old... Did you guys actually, you know what? Before we go into the news, did anyone see the Star Wars show's holiday special?
No.
Okay, so they did a take on the original Star Wars holiday special, and it was amazing. It was absolutely... The Star Wars show episode was horrible. Like, it was horrible, just like the Star Wars holiday special was horrible. But it was horrible in a good way. Does that make sense?
So bad it's good.
Yes, they had a Mandalorian sing-along and everything. It's so bad that it's amazing. Like, I don't even remember the name of the song. Like, you just need to check it out. If you don't know, I'll link it in the show notes for somebody. It's the Star Wars show's holiday special was so bad it's good. Like, normally the show is good, but man, it was the holiday show. Anyway, let's move on to the news. So, Lucasfilm has finally addressed the rumors of recreating Carrie Fisher digitally. Basically, at this point, they said Carrie Fisher is, and always will be part of the Lucasfilm family, and she was our princess, our general, and more importantly, our friend. We are still hurting from her loss. We cherish her memory and legacy as Princess Leia, and will always strive to honor everything she gave to Star Wars. So, they released a statement like that. But does that really mean that they're not doing her digitally?
Well, so, here's what the further quote says. We want to assure our fans that Lucasfilm has no plans to digitally recreate Carrie Fisher's performance as Princess or General Leia Organa.
Yeah.
But they
I was going to say, no yes, they did say specifically that they're not going to do it.
But they say currently say that. Like, and I get the two.
No,
the two
they don't
together.
Say currently. They say we want to assure our fans that Lucasfilm has no plans to digitally recreate Carrie Fisher's performance as Princess or General Leia Organa.
Right.
They are very cut and dry. They didn't put any currently. They didn't make it ambiguous. They have said there are no plans to digitally recreate. All
right. So maybe in my head, I read currently, and that's why I was like,
No, they're not doing it.
They're not doing it. All right. So officially, episode 9 will have to be rewritten. And we did talk about that they were going to meet last week. They were meeting in LA to talk about rewrites. So definitely, it looks like they did cut and dry then. So there was no currently, even though in my mind I read currently. See, maybe this is why I should listen to audiobooks instead of read them, because I add words in there. But who knows?
But we discussed this in the on the last episode where we were talking about how it's a really... It would be a really odd situation for them to be in should they have chosen to digitally recreate her, because at that point in time when they would be filming, they would still be mourning her. So trying to replace her with a digital version would probably be incredibly weird for everyone involved. Not least because her daughter is also still part of the cast. So, yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that they'll just hire a lookalike stand-in sort of thing,
or do you think might? I'm not sure.
We'll have to see. The other thing is too, because right now we know episode 8 takes place immediately, like no time gap after episode 7. How do we know episode 9 is not going to be like a 2-year time gap and they can explain away her passing?
Probably the best that they could do.
And that's one of those things where we just don't know, because in all the other Star Wars films, look at episode 1 to episode 2, there's 10 years there. Even 2 to 3, there's 3 years. We have the entire Clone Wars series that takes place in between it. Between episode 3 and episode 4, there's 20 years Luke's, 19 years Luke's growing up. And then even between, A New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi and Empire, Return of the Jedi and Empire is about a year. I think it was 9 months to be exact, and it's one of those things where that was the shortest time period between, one film and the next one, was between Empire and Return of the Jedi. And so now we're going to have our first one just be directly after. And so between episode 8 and 9, we don't know. That's speculation past a film that hasn't been released yet. We're going to see 2 Star Wars films before we see that one. So,
Yeah, knowing that that they have come out and they said even we don't normally respond to fan or press speculation. I think they're feeling the pressure because the digital recreations of Tarkin and Leia in Rogue One were not positively received. you know, and they're really, because they've decided to pioneer that technology in Rogue One, people are really thinking, oh, well, they're clearly, that's a built-in reason why they should just continue doing that, or are going to continue doing that. So it's nice to have the studio come out and say, no, there's no plans, kind of, you know, put people's emotions to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's, they did come out and say it, so we'll see kind of what comes from this soon in the, you know, next couple weeks, because I'm sure we'll hear more about episode 8 soon. Also, just real quick, I know I didn't put any notes on this. Do you guys see that, what do you call it? Rogue One has passed 500 million in the US?
Nice.
Yeah, it was the number one grossing Disney film of the year, 2016.
I was going to say of 2017.
They counted for 2016 because that was the release, yeah. Even though they.
If you look up 2017, it's the top earner for
probably
Disney.
Probably still, because it's been, you know, 5 weeks in and still, you know, in the top three films for good reason. And also because I saw it again last night. Anyway, let's move on to.
There you go.
We saw Star Wars Rebels this week, Warhead, which was a very interesting episode. You know, it's one of those things where I say. They do have some filler episodes, but this episode was not, I don't know, it was a filler episode, but it wasn't a filler episode because it had some really good parts to it. This episode, Warhead, revolved around Zeb and Chopper and AP-5 are left alone at Chopper Base, and a new droid lands, which is an EXD infiltrator droid that they find out later on, but they brought it back to the base. Donnie, did you get a chance to see this?
I did indeed. It's almost like a classic bottle episode, really, where they're stuck in one place and they can't really leave it. So it actually was fairly effective for me, even though technically, yeah, it's a filler episode, but I thought the actual storyline of it was pretty successful and quite interesting. And obviously it set up a load of really cool stuff for the rest of the season.
Yes, it did, which is why I felt it was amazing. Eric, did you get a chance to see this?
I did not. Okay. I am not on Rebels, but I need to be.
Okay. So this episode, it was definitely one of those filler episodes, kind of like the, you know, Zeb has had a few episodes that have been kind of like throwaway, but had some really good nuggets of information in it. This one right here, just the interactions between Zeb and Chopper is always great, but throwing AP-5 into it, was just really, like, the comedy was very C-3PO, RTD2, you know, kind of comedy style with Zeb thrown in there, you know, almost like a Chewbacca type character. So I really enjoyed the comedy through the whole thing. But the best part about this film was the very end. You know, they did a good job of being able to get rid of the infiltrator droid and not it revealing where the Rebel base is. But you see the long game that Thrawn is playing at the end. He's like, they now have limited, you know, we now know it's within these 96, you know, their base is on these 96 planets. And he doesn't care that, you know, they took out a ship, but more that I now am closer to my goal of discovering where the Rebel Alliance is, like where these rebels are hiding. And like, it's really menacing just seeing Thrawn be Thrawn at this point.
Yeah, because the other thing that you would have to think of is that even though it's like, one EXD infiltrator droid, you'd have to imagine that should they tap into every other droid that is still deployed, who is still accessible, they'd be able to narrow it down even further to be like, hey, this is the one that's missing. So this is the one that exploded, but we've accounted for all 95 of the other ones. So you're like, okay, so where was the last known place that this droid was kind of operating
Or even trajectory, you know, like Vader did that in Empire Strikes Back. It's like, you know, release probes along all known trajectory of the Millennium Falcon. Like, that's it. Like,
so I feel like it's even easier for him to narrow it down again once he's accounted for all of the other droids that are still in operation. So even though I thought that Zeb's plan was particularly inspired for being able to send it back and basically freeze it in a moment in time so that it explodes when it gets back to the ship rather than self-destructing on the Rebel base, like, that was really clever. I thought that was great. But also, it's like this weird catch 22. No matter what they would have done, there would have been some way of narrowing it down to which droid was the one that was missing. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it definitely, like I said, the episode, you know, you can take it as one of those kind of filler episodes, but it definitely has some great information. And Dave Filoni is a master of this. Even the episodes in Clone Wars that centered around Jar Jar Binks, you know, a lot of times you're like, oh, it's a Jar Jar episode, but there's some really good stuff that happens in them, which is always great. So I enjoyed the episode. Definitely check it out if you have not. But next week's episode, we've seen a couple trailers for it. And this one specifically that I linked in the document for you guys talks about the trial of the Darksaber. We know from the mid-season trailer that Sabine has now taken the Darksaber that Maul previously had, which we saw in Clone Wars, which was owned by Tar Vizsla, the first Mandalorian to be inducted into the Jedi Order. And this episode just looks amazing. Like, from a lore perspective to, you know, kind of her learning. Like, I don't know if we're going to see kind of what we saw in the mid-season trailer where her going to Mandalore to try to rally the Mandalorians behind the Rebel Alliance. You know, I don't know if we're going to go that far, but just, like, starting with learning about the Darksaber and kind of where it came from. Like, it opens up so many of the old EU stories to be brought back into canon that it makes me literally, I'm giddy right now. Like, I'm, like, as excited for this as I was for, you know, Episode 7 and Rogue One. Like, I am just like, oh my gosh, Tar Vizsla, this is going to be, like, is this going to open up the Old Republic era? Are we going to see things like Darth Bane and, you know, more of Korriban / Moriban be brought into canon and brought, you know, fleshed out as storylines? Like, I'm just ecstatic about this. So what do you think, Danya, Eric?
I'm really excited for this next episode. I think it's going to be great. Having to sit on the fact that I knew that the Darksaber was going to be a thing for as long as I had to was really, really difficult because they showed a lot of, like, clips of stuff at Star Wars Celebration last summer. So it was really, really difficult to be like, I know this stuff is coming up and I know what it's going to mean for so many people, but I can't really talk about it because it will really spoil the surprise when it actually happens, and that's worth holding out for. But even just in general, this clip that they've released as, like, a teaser for the episode is really fun. Like, I really, really like that Kanan is basically being like, I've got one arm behind my back, I've got my lightsaber, and I'm blind. Like, come at me.
Come at me, bro. Come at me. Like, yeah. Now, I will say, it's pretty cool, like, as he's teaching her, he's, you know, seeing all sorts of wonderful nuggets of information, and he tells her that, you know, you have to use all your abilities. And as her saber goes flying out of her hand, you know, she uses, it looks like, what, a light whip or something like that?
Yeah.
Which is just absolutely awesome. Like, we've seen that in other things. So I'm super excited to, you know, to see this episode in action. And even, you know, with the downside with Rebels is it's so short. They're only 30 minutes, 22 minutes with all the commercials and everything.
Ugh.
I know, right?
I'm so lucky. You know, I get to watch it without any ads or commercials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, but it's still one of those things where, like, I really hope they don't try to do too much in this episode, like, where they take too much out at once, but, like, I want to know it all. Like, I am just beyond ecstatic about learning about the Darksaber and everything else that we can do from it. Just, oh, man. It just makes, I'm rewatching it on silent right now as we talk, and it's just, Sabine is the perfect character to kind of tie this all together. Like, she is the perfect character, because as a character, we really love her for all she does. And at the same time, like, she is strong, you know, she's a strong female lead who can be the leader of the Mandalorians with this awesome Darksaber. And I do want to talk a little bit about her when we get to our spotlight topic, too. So, anything else about Trials?
No, other than, like, I'm really excited, not only because Darksaber and all of the lore that goes along with that, but also because it's very obviously going to be a super Sabine-centric episode, and I love learning more about Sabine. So, bring it on!
Okay, and last thing I just want to let people know is there's also a book called Darksaber by Kevin J. Anderson in the old EU. It has nothing to do with this type of Darksaber that we're talking about. Just so people don't, like, look it up and be like, ooh, what is this? No, it's not. It's a good book. It was one of the first, like, one of the first standalone books after the Thrawn trilogy that came out in the old EU. I think it came out in, like, 95, 96. But I do know there was one called Darksaber, and it's not about this lightsaber at all. Just so you guys know. I just want to throw it out there so someone doesn't, like, go read and be like, it's nothing like that. It does involve Luke, though, which is cool. Last bit of news that kind of came up to this week, because there really wasn't that much news this week. We're kind of in that lull right at the beginning of the year. We don't have much about Episode 8 yet. We still are kind of winding down on some of the Rebel, you know, Rogue One stuff, and we have Star Wars Rebels keeping us up to date. But right now, there is a petition on change.org with thousands of signatures. In fact, I'm going to open up to see how many we actually have.
It was like 98-something.
Yeah, it's 98,381 supporters of this signature to make Princess Leia an official Disney princess. Now, there's been a lot of speculation on this over the years since Disney bought, you know, Star Wars.
Yeah, I thought she already was.
No, she's not an official Disney princess. Because you got to remember, Disney princesses, the term Disney princess is, you don't even have to be a princess to be considered a Disney princess. Like, Mulan is a Disney princess, but she's not even a princess. Mm-hmm. She's the savior of China in that time, but she's not a princess.
Even if she married Li Shang, she still wouldn't still be, not, a princess.
Be a princess, but she's considered a Disney princess. There's a couple videos on YouTube, you know, some great YouTubers talk about, like, the stipulation of what you have to be a Disney princess, or what it has been. Like, even Ariel's daughter in the second Little Mermaid is not considered a Disney princess because she was introduced in a sequel, even though she was the main character. You know what I mean?
I'm surprised Disney would be the one placing that restriction on its own princesses. I don't know. It feels all very arbitrary to me. You have been able to get art prints and, hell, I don't know, even slippers that have Princess Leia on them next to Cinderella and the other princess, Jasmine.
Yeah.
All that for years now on Etsy, ever since Disney first purchased Star Wars, people have been saying it's like it's so familiar.
She's not an official Disney princess, but she is. And with the tragic loss of Carrie Fisher, I feel like people are like, it's even more fitting now that she become an inducted, you know, official princess.
Yeah, this is the thing that would trip me up on this, is that it's very, very clear if you go into a Disney store that they've segmented off their merchandise and have drawn very clear lines between their different properties. So the Disney princess and any Disney movie merchandise is very separate to the sections dedicated to Star Wars, and then very different to the sections dedicated to Marvel. So I would wonder if they would want to start crossing those over into each other. I think the only line currently that does kind of cross all of them over is the Tsum Tsum lines, which are the little squishy plushy things that you can stack. Those are the ones that go across all of the franchises, and they're mixed together because they're one brand of stuff.
Yeah.
But they have very clearly defined, like, lines of who they target when they merchandise this sort of stuff. So I feel like it would be less down to Disney specifically, in that they would want to do this as a tribute, and more their merchandising department how they'd merchandise it, because it would all be down to that. And it sounds really cold and really terrible, but, you know, and it sucks, but most of Disney Star Wars merchandise is not aimed at girls or women. The vast majority of it is aimed at boys. So it would really depend on how their merchandising department wants to play this.
No, and that's where it's almost a possibility for them to create a whole new Disney princess line aimed at girls. I'm not saying that it couldn't be aimed at boys, too. I'm just saying, with the Disney princesses are heavily aimed at little girls. They even have, like, the Disney princess makeover, where you can dress up as a princess in the parks, but they also have during that, just so you guys, like, I don't know if you guys haven't been to Disneyland lately, like my mom took a picture the other day, they have an option not only for Princess Leia in those makeups along with Aurora and Cinderella and Snow White, but also Rey. So you can get, have your kids, like if your girl is 5 years old and she wants to be not, you know, Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty, you know, or she doesn't want to be any of the other princesses, but wants to be Rey, they have the Rey costume there and they'll do her hair like Rey from Jakku.
That's so really cool. Like, I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so actually, you know what? I bet you I can find a picture in like 10 seconds. Like, you know, Disney.
I mean, so far as I'm concerned, like, Princess Leia is already a Disney princess. It's done. She's in movies that are released by Disney. She is a princess. That is her. It's like, okay, she's a Disney princess. That's the only, I feel like it's so, the audience decides. I don't understand why she's not like official. I don't know.
No, and I get it. Like, my biggest thing is, I think it's one of those things where they just don't recognize her in the parks. Like, you don't have a, you know, a princess.
She doesn't have a castle, I guess, right? It was destroyed on Alderaan.
I mean, it was blown up.
It was blown up. Like, maybe too soon.
Hashtag awkward.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, we'll just see. But the biggest thing is, like, you have, like, people who aren't, you know, princesses who aren't princesses are targeted as Disney princesses and other things like that. So we'll see. I feel like, especially with the opening of Star Wars Land, I think we'll see a Princess Leia walking around the park at some point. That's just my thoughts. I'm sure we will.
With Star Wars Land.
Yeah, so I feel like we may not see her becoming an official Disney princess. Like, she won't be in, like, the princess greeting area, but I'm sure she'll show up in the parks.
I want brunch with Leia. I want
that would be really cool,
with, like,
right?
Han and Princess Leia, and like, I just want brunch with everyone. Like, it'd be so much fun.
Wookiees and waffles.
Wookiees and waffles, and you have to have your breakfast blue milk. Like, that's what it has to be. Blue milk and waffles.
Oh my god, blue milk and Wookiees and waffles. Perfect.
I like it. I think that's the episode title right here. Wookiees and waffles. All right. Anyway, so yeah, I would love to see Leia as an official Disney princess. Go ahead and sign the petition. We'll link to it in our show notes. And on to our spotlight top. Oh, actually, you know what? Before we go to the spotlight, this just popped in my head. We do have Princess Leia as an anime character, though. She was in Star Wars Rebels.
She was.
Yeah. So, like, all the princesses have to be an anime character.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, there you go.
She was animated in an episode of Star Wars Rebels in season 2, so maybe. We'll see. Click on the link. Sign the petition. All right, on to our spotlight topic of midichlorians. Of course, Eric's on the show where we talk about prequel stuff. Anyway.
What does that mean?
I love you, Eric. Hey, when we talk about Watto, you're the only one I think of when we talk about Watto again. Anyway, let's talk about midichlorians. So here's the thing. My first notes about midichlorians was, is it the forgotten item the fans just want to go away, or is it really the science behind the Force?
You know, I think it can be both, but what surprised me was on the Star Wars Wikia, it's obviously it gathers, because it's definitive, sort of all the other mentions that that midichlorians have rated throughout the years. I lost that there's a line of dialogue in Revenge of the Sith where Palpatine talks to Anakin about Darth Plagueis and his ability to influence, guess what? The midichlorians to create life. And really just a lot of interesting things in the Clone Wars series. Yoda travels to the wellspring of life, right? In season 6, episode 12, called Destiny, and discovers the true origin of whatever midichlorians. So they strike the casual viewer as only really existing in that scene between Qui-Gon and Jake Lloyd's Anakin in episode 1, but there's been some efforts to really kind of hone them and bring them in and kind of acknowledge them, even though fan reaction has been mixed at best.
No, I agree with you, and I you know, and here's my joke with midichlorians. If they're part of every living cell, and there's, you know, multiple, so like my cell only contains one midichlorian, that's why I can't use the Force and move objects with it, but you know, mm-hmm. Anakin's had over 20,000 per cell. Like, it's bursting at the seams with midichlorians, and he can communicate with them, you know, stronger. That's why he's so strong in the Force. Like, I guess that makes sense. Like, I guess if you look at, like, DNA and the, you know, things that make up a living cell, you know, do they just hang out by the mighty mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell? And is that, you know, sorry, I,
well,
I love the
mitochondria. They needed to look, I've been tossing around this word all day thinking about this discussion, but it's an inelegant solution to really just, like, because some people just hate how there is a science excuse at all, because the Force is a religion, so why do you need, like, why do you need a physical presence? But I actually, for me, I like that it's, you know, scientific, and it's obviously if we are technologically advanced and have warp speed, we should be able to look into ourselves and kind of explain how something like this exists, how we're able to do, you know, the equivalent of like telekinesis and telepathy and all this other stuff. We should be able to kind of basically understand. I like that there's something for somebody who wants to look under a microscope to find regarding the Force.
But this is the thing that I don't understand, is that we didn't really need an explanation for it. We didn't need midichlorians to understand the Force. It was pretty well established, even from just the one little bit that Obi-Wan says in the original Star Wars, where he says, well, the Force is what gives a Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. A Jedi can feel the Force flowing through him. That's pretty much it. And I kind of liked that in the original trilogy, it was never made into this, like, mystery. You didn't need to figure out what the Force is. We're not wondering how it works or anything like that. It essentially just boils down to it's an energy field that, like, you can sense. Well, but there's no real explanation to it. And I like that. I really like the idea that it was being able to sense things, and being someone who was Force sensitive or a Jedi meant that you were in tune with this sort of just
energy field. No, I get that, and I kind of go from the original trilogy too. Like, I love, you know, Obi-Wan explaining what the Force is to Luke. Like, that's like the music comes up.
Oh,
swells.
Yeah, you're never gonna beat
it's like the best explanation of the Force. At the same time, though, I feel like the midichlorians, because they're tied into Rebels, they're tied into they're tied into the old Clone Wars series, they're tied into all the prequels, and they've been around. You know, George Lucas has made comment to them since 1977.
Yes.
You know, so they've been around for a long time. He's always had it. And so this is just kind of how he sees it, how they're actually able to communicate to it. And it does make the idea of, like, quiet your mind. You know, don't, like, pretend it's not there. Just close your eyes. Like, when Luke is trying to, you know, with the blast shield down, how can I see? He's like, pretend it's not there. Like, you don't trust them. Like, listen to what you have. It also brings up the idea of bloodlines. You know, we see this in the original trilogy, you know, when Luke says, you know, the Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. And my sister has it. And with bloodlines,
it points to something in the blood.
Yeah, it points to something in the blood that lets you communicate. So I think midichlorians have their point, but I think, honestly,
it muddles things. Because then you think, like, okay, so if they are these organisms that, or microscopic entities that live in, like, everything, then what are, like, the dark side ones slightly different molecularly than the light side ones? Like, how do you tap into that one way or the other? Is that then something innately in your blood from when you are born that you cannot escape from, because those versions of midichlorians are one or the other? Can they change? How do they change on a molecular level? What influences that change? So it becomes a lot more difficult to explain rather than manipulating energy.
Well, you got to remember, it's not the midichlorians that is the Force. It's you use the midichlorians to communicate with it. So they're the
midichlorians are a middleman.
They're the middleman. That's what they are.
Because the midichlorians are The midichlorians are designed to answer the question, which admittedly nobody was asking, but which is why do some people not have the Force? Like, why are there people who are Jedi Knights who can wield the Force, and why do Jedi mind tricks work so well on stormtroopers? And I just don't buy that it's just because all stormtroopers are dumb, you know? Like, I don't think that that's valid, right? Like, oh, just some people who can't use the Force are just stupid, they just need to, you know, could a person who is not a Jedi pulled aside at birth to learn the ways of the Force, could they eventually grow and study, and is it a discipline that everyone's in, you know, could be into? Or is it, you know, just kind of down to bad genes why you can't one day too become a Jedi Knight? And this would seem to answer that. Like, midichlorians are, they're present in all living things because the Force is surrounding us and binding us and penetrating us. But they're not, you know, very much so. You couldn't hear them. You couldn't hear them. You wouldn't possess enough quantities of them for it to mean anything if you're the lay population.
Yeah, then that also brings up another question then, is if it is a very scientific thing and it's less mystical, could it be that then you could use a scientific inducer to make yourself in contact with midichlorians?
Well, I would think so.
Well, I was going to say, and if the midichlorians are simply the way you communicate with the Force, because again, the Force is still, you know, they talk about the cosmic Force, the living Force. We see, you know, Qui-Gon Jinn talk about, be mindful of the living Force, you know, be mindful of those things. And it's the cosmic Force that, you know, had him, allowed him to return, and all these wonderful things. It's the midichlorians that allow you to communicate with that Force. So it's the midichlorians in your blood, over 20,000 in Anakin, that allows him to be able to tap into it without training. Right? Like, without training, like a Jedi. Whereas a Jedi has been able to quiet their mind and be able to touch, you know, communicate with the midichlorians to see what is the will of the Force. So I don't think it's the midichlorians being light side or dark side. I feel like it's the emotion. Like, because we talk about, you know, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to, you know, all those things that get to the dark side. I feel like it's your communication with the midichlorians influences the Force. And it's that, you know, these midichlorians that you have, and if you were able to do like a blood transfusion with someone who had off the charts, could you communicate with the Force? Maybe temporarily, but at the same time, do you have the training to be able to communicate with it? Like, think about today, let alone, you know, in a galaxy far, far away where there's technology up the wazoo. Just think about what we do today between Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Would you be able to quiet your mind well enough to be able to communicate internally to something like that, even if it's only temporarily? Because again, if you do a blood transfusion, you don't have this magical midichlorian Jedi blood forever. It would, you know, eventually, you know, dilute out to your own blood and you wouldn't have it again. So, you know, something like Han Solo and his magic luck, maybe he is a smidge Force sensitive, and he's, you know, his lightning fast reflexes as a pilot is because he's communicating with the midichlorians, but he's not able to actually sustain a, you know, a connection to become like a Jedi, like Luke. You know, he even says, you know, Luke knows something he'll never know. But maybe there's a little bit in everyone, because if midichlorians are in everyone, but it's the amount that allows a Jedi to actually communicate to the Force.
There's so much genetic modification happening in Star Wars. You know, cloning, for instance, cloning, accelerated growth, all of the things that are going on. I'm very surprised nobody's invented like an injector of just straight up midichlorians to like give some Sith somewhere like once more power and is like, I'm gonna inject these, you know, into my bloodstream.
Yeah, that's what I would think. That's what I was getting at. It was like, where is the synthetic kind of amplifier to make someone Force sensitive?
But I mean,
there is, but it's in EU. It's not an official canon anymore. But there was, like, so this is going back to like old Republic style, like long, you know, 3,000 years before. But everyone from like Exar Kung to the Immortal Emperor from like Star Wars: The Old Republic, they literally have done things where they use Sith sorcery to destroy like all living life and basically gain their power to become immortal and stuff like that. So basically, you know, use their stuff. Like, it's not an ejector. Like,
yeah, but then that was less. That wasn't using the midichlorian.
Well, he's using their energy. They're living. Well, yeah, but using that their was energy. When remember, it was still... Midichlorians aren't... Remember, midichlorians aren't... Well, no, this was this all came out after midichlorians were a thing. So you got to remember, like, midichlorians themselves, you know, if you look at it, is the... They're the item, the scientific item that allows a Jedi to communicate with the Force. So it's not the Force itself.
Yeah, but so, then I feel like for me, that just unnecessarily complicates things. Whereas you can just get away with saying that the Force is an energy source that you can either communicate with or you can't.
I agree.
But
can you absorb somebody else's Force? Can you absorb somebody else's energy?
Yeah, and that's what... that's a simpler thing, because that's been used in fantasy genre for decades. Like, the idea of being able to absorb someone else's magic or take someone else's magic away. Like, that is something that has been in stories for, like, as far back as they go. So it's a nice, simple, understandable explanation that also allows... for a lot of freedom of, like, what you can do with it. But I feel like, for me, midichlorians just unnecessarily adds a middle step to it that isn't necessary. And it
There's
kind
something
of,
else that...
It was kind of Lucas, I feel, trying to take it into a hard sci-fi, almost, place. Whereas, for me, Star Wars has always felt... better fantasy. When it's like this almost space opera or like this fantasy kind of element to it, rather than going really hard sci-fi, because it works better on a story level when they go that way. When Lucas tries to move too much in a political and hard sci-fi kind of direction, it moves further away from what feels like Star Wars. So for me, when it came about, I was just kind of like, this just feels like it's just unnecessary to understanding the Force.
Yeah, but this also brings to, you know, looking at Rogue One, you know, when you have Baze and Chirrut, you know, they're guardians of the wills, right?
Yeah.
You know, protectors of the Temple of Kyber and all this stuff. Even though, like, all the things say they are not Force users, which is great. You know, we had a Star Wars film with no Force users other than Vader at the end and a couple scenes with
him. Well, no, they didn't say that they weren't Force users. They just said that they weren't Jedi.
Nope, they say they aren't Force users on StarWars.com. Officially, they have access to the Force. Yep, that's why I noticed that on the first one here. If you go to StarWars.com and pull up Chirrut specifically... let me go see. I'm going to pull it up and read it exactly right here. There it goes. But yeah, so it says he is not a Jedi, is not a Force user. Let's see. Deeply spiritual, Chirrut Emwe believes all living things are connected through the Force. His sightless eyes do not prevent him from being a highly skilled warrior. Though he lacks Force abilities, this warrior monk has rigorously honed his body through intense physical and mental discipline. He lacks any Force abilities. So... You know, at the same time, though, he also picks up on little things about Cassian when he went to, you know, we talked about, maybe he does have some Force abilities, even though StarWars.com says he doesn't. He was able to pick up that, you know, Cassian was going to kill, you know, Jin's father, Galen. So, but at the same time, though, if we take midichlorians into account, even though he doesn't have any Force abilities, maybe because he is so spiritual, he is able to essentially communicate with the Force at a very low level, because maybe he only has 5, you know, midichlorians per cell in his body, and that's not enough to actually be able to move, you know, an object like, you know, a Jedi can do. Levitation, you know, telekinesis is a very common Jedi thing. We see every Jedi in all the films do it, but maybe he is able to use that in addition to all his, you know, his stuff. And that's where I'm saying, like, well, maybe midichlorians is important because of someone like Chirrut. And this is I'll link it to you guys real quick, the Star Wars one. But what do you guys think of that?
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Mostly because I just have never been a fan of midichlorians anyway. So.
I'll agree with you 100%.
What's
there.
Not
I was
to
never
be
a fan
of? They're Switzerland.
I don't know. Yeah, the communication. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to see the positive side to it. And at the same time, I feel like if they did flesh it out, because I will say the episodes in in Clone Wars, where they kind of fleshed out midichlorians a little bit, the whole, you know, the whole Qui-Gon coming to talk to, you know, Yoda, you know, talking about all energy from the living force, from all the things that have ever lived, feeds into the cosmic force, binding everything and communicating us through the midichlorians. Like, I would love to see, you know, Yoda show up in episode 8. I would love to see, you know, as a force ghost.
Oh,
I would
me love too. To see, 100%.
Like, you know, yeah, or Obi-Wan show up. You know, he was my master before me, you know, and stuff like that. Like, being able to see this, because we see Yoda in Rebels. You know, again, Yoda's still alive at this time. But the fact that, you know, they've learned how to communicate through the midichlorians, through the living force, you know, it's one of those things where...
It is specifically the midichlorians that make force ghosts possible. Here's the other thing that midichlorians have done for you recently. is you know, the force ghosts. And the fact that it's, again, it's scientific, but it's like a scientific explanation for the soul. Because a living being inhabited a body where midichlorians were in, you know, close concert with the person that was wielding them, or communicating with them, your soul is then preserved through midichlorians as a conduit between the living force and the cosmic force to then be able to gain what is essentially immortality. You are become one with the force. You know, you, your consciousness is preserved. Well, this is, and it
this
turns
is the thing
out,
then. Is it their consciousness, or is that that actually the midichlorian speaking?
What's
through
the difference?
What is basically
so,
just?
And then I think that's where you have to take the force. You know, there is a step of faith. There is, you know, when you look at Baze and Churrit, they have faith in the force, even if they don't directly or even indirectly wield the force, they believe in it. And I think being able that faith, that belief, you know, and you see this with like other people, like I live in Louisville, Kentucky now, and Muhammad Ali was a huge, huge influencer here in this town. Why? Because he's from here. There's the Muhammad Ali Museum. He believed he was the greatest. And that's why he went on to do so many things, because he believed it. Not because others told him. It's he believed it. I believe, I you know, in Rogue One, when Churrit goes up, I am one with the force is with me. Like, when he says that, he believes he is one with the force. And he's able to walk past, besides the fact that it's stormtroopers firing at him, and they're all bad shots, you know, he believes it, and he's able to get to, you know, that tower. And be able to turn off, you know, link into the tower so that they can go ahead and get a signal through. Like, it's that.
Well, but believing it is enough, and I think he's affecting the Force. Even if StarWars.com says he's not a Force user, I think that the Force sees what he's doing and is like, hey, let's help out. Because it's about the essence of a person and consciousness. If you just look at Force ghosts as being ghosts, as being a spirit, and it's so unscientific, it's just, oh, it's somebody's spirit after they die. Like, that's fine, but... You know, it's a choice, but you could see it as being so much more, right? That it's intrinsically linked to the Force from what was there previously. And what is a spirit? But if not, like, a spirit is not still a full person, because a spirit doesn't have the body that the full person had. But a spirit is that consciousness, that essence, which in this case is just the microscopic, you know, life forms that made up that person's consciousness to begin with. So I think for me, it carries. Like, for me, it totally works and carries and is fine by me. I don't think it really makes things worse. And it seems like, again, just looking through the Wikia here, that the two episodes of The Clone Wars where a lot of this stuff was said turned out to be the last two. So yeah. I mentioned Destiny before, but the last episode ever is called Sacrifice, and Yoda is on Moriban, and you know, there's more information about Force ghosts and that being specifically a light side of the Force thing. So, but to me, it's just endlessly interesting, and I don't think midichlorians hinder the greater understanding of why things work. We still don't understand why things work or what it's all meant to be, and you know, I can understand the hesitation to embrace, like, it's because, on the other hand, it's a plot device for, like, this young boy from Tatooine, this young slave boy, has potential And this is scientific proof of his potential. I get it. It's kind of wonky, told through George Lucas's dialogue. But I have no problem with the concept.
Yeah. I will say, it almost makes me wonder if midichlorians are the missing piece, going back to, you know, Rogue One and even Catalyst before it, of the synthetic kyber crystals that, you know, Galen was trying to create. You know, if he's creating these crystals from scratch, maybe it's the midichlorian that weren't embedded into it, because we know kyber crystals are referred to as the living crystals. Could it be that they're
the
living,
living crystals?
Could it could it be that kyber crystals are imbued or just have, you know, midichlorian in them? That's how they're grown again, because it's 100%. All living things around us, right? And you know,
100%.
Well, I'm just thinking about this. Like, if midichlorian is like this middleman, this special piece that allowed something to tap into it, when we know that the kyber crystals, you know, choose the Jedi. You know, this is how Ahsoka gets white crystals.
The wand chases the wizard, Mr. Potter.
I know, right? And there's a lot of Harry Potter things I've stayed away from in this episode right now. But it's one of those things where, like, could it be that the crystals are force attuned because of the midichlorians, and you know their alignment in the crystal is what gives it the color? Because we know that when the crystal bleeds is why, you know, when it's ripped against its will to something, and that's why it turns red. At least we learned that in the Ahsoka novel. I don't know, Donnie. I know you read the books, Donnie. What do you think about that?
I did. I just, like, all I keep coming around to is, like, it feels like an unnecessary middle step. All of it could be explained just by the Force being almost a semi-sentient energy field, like, without the midichlorians being a middle step.
But you just said a semi-sentient, maybe that semi-sentient is the midichlorians.
Right, exactly. I mean, because otherwise, well, what you said about the kyber crystals being called the living crystals, the midichlorians inside the crystals call and speak to the midichlorians inside the Jedi and are like, hey, let's meet up, let's hang out, text me your number, you know, let's get coffee. And
I don't
use
know if they
me,
Snapchat each other, but...
Use me in your lightsaber. And,
to protect
and it will,
the good.
And, you know. And protect the good, and you know, it allows you to... Because through communion with the Force and midichlorians of the conduit, you gain greater knowledge, understanding, and power.
This also brings up the argument of, you know, if Anakin was the person to bring balance to the Force, did he bring balance to the Force, or did he truly bring balance to the Force, or did he... Did he actually just destroy a whole bunch and then at the end balance the Force? Because you got to remember, balance of the Force, does that mean like literally two Jedi, two Sith, which is what we ended up with at the end, kind of? Or is it, you know, balance in that everything is harmony and peaceful and, you know, the dark side is actually, you know, he fell
but
before
then,
he could bring balance.
Then at the end, we didn't necessarily end up with two Jedi, balance. Two Sith. Because it ends up just being Luke.
Mm-hmm.
With the potential for Leia.
Yeah. So that's not balance.
I know. So that's my question is like, so, but did he bring balance temporarily with the rise in the Empire? When there was, you know, Yoda and Obi-Wan around, and then obviously Vader and Sidious, Palpatine. And they were the only one. Yeah, Palpatine. Sidious Palpatine. You know, were they the only ones around? Now, obviously, we know there's Inquisitors, and there's Kanan. And there's Ezra, and there's all these other things that they're not, you know, Kanan really was never a Jedi. He gets the rank of Jedi, you know, on Lothal in Rebels, because he left when he was a young kid. You know, he watched his master get slain, so he never became a Jedi Knight, and he's training Ezra. So, like, just like Luke, who gets kind of this haphazard Jedi training, you know, we right. see Ezra and Kanan kind of getting, so they're not really Jedi. At the same time, the Inquisitors aren't really Sith, they're Inquisitors. So, like, it's definitely an interesting thing, because if he was to bring balance, or was it just completely BS, and he really wasn't this, and this is just what, you know, he wasn't the boy to the, you know, the prophecy, and he just has a really high count of midichlorians, and that's why it's strong, and, you know, the Force is strong in Luke's family, because, you know, his dad had a really high count, and then he has a high count, and, you know, Rey will have a high count. See what I did there? But, you know, I just don't know, you know, midichlorians is a very interesting topic. I would love to see what, you know, you guys listening, have to say about it, because it definitely is one of those things where I will say myself, and I know, Danya, you probably agree with me, it's one of those things like we just like to forget about it a lot of times, because
yeah,
it's kind of unnecessary.
I tend to just forget about it, in fact, unless I'm watching something that directly references them, most of the time I just forget that they're a thing.
Meh.
Because meh, even without it, it works.
No, well, no. I think it feels more arbitrary if they didn't exist. Like,
it's more mystical. It's more
you
mystical.
Get to be no. It's
for me.
No,
it's
arbitrary.
More mystical.
It's a negative
and belief
thing.
Needs to be
no. It's
a huge
so much more
it.
Negative then, because it's like, oh, you can be a Jedi and you can't be. Sorry, you know. Sorry, Johnny. Only Jimmy can be a Jedi. But it's like, okay, but why? And that's the answer. Why?
Well, it almost feels like the, you know. Eric, you're from MuggleCast. You know, it feels like, well, why is one person a wizard and the other person's
why
not?
Why is them not? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, blood, right? Muggles have different blood, magical, you know.
But then
it works for us on Harry Potter.
But then how are witches or wizards born from two Muggle parents?
Well, J.K. Rowling a long time ago said there was a wizard somewhere on that line, like way back somewhere.
Yeah.
That's what we're meant to believe.
We're meant to believe it. And you know, and this is where, like, when you take that the Harry Potter, you know, as a reference to this, because you have J.K. Rowling, you know, is it canon when she says something out of context that's not in a book? You know, that's where the canon stuff comes from. At the same time, George Lucas has also said, it is said that certain creatures are born with higher awareness to the Force than humans. Their brains are different, and they have more midichlorians in their cell. Like, that's a direct quote from George Lucas.
Well, and then you had that explained.
And that was from 1977.
That explains Borgullet. I mean, not that Borgullet should be ever brought up in discussion because it's such a useless addition to that plot, but it explains creatures that have more force sensitivity because they have a different biological makeup, right? So yeah. Borgullet can apparently tell truth from lie, and it's a creature, and there's clearly something in his biology that allows him to do that, but it could also be, you know, tapping into the force, a different aspect of the Force.
Jesus,
what's that?
No, it just that whole bit of Rogue One just made me go really, really.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, these other there are other creatures out there, not just humans, that have a Force proclivity, which you know.
And, yeah, like and the Bendu, so, I guess, from Rebels.
Well, and is that, you know, so there's again a biological advantage that species has to other. Just like evolution gives us all by different biological advantages, species that are still alive today, right?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be evenly distributed.
Yeah. All right. So anything else you guys want to say about midichlorians? I would love to get tweets about this and emails about this, just so we can maybe follow up one, you know, in a later episode.
All the tweets we get are just going to be, oh God, Resistance what? Radio talked about midichlorians for an hour. I can't help it. Yeah. Or I can't listen. My ears are bleeding.
Oh, jeez. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Tell us what you think about midichlorians. Do you agree with Eric that they are necessary and they explain a lot?
Did I say necessary? I think they're great.
He thinks they're great. Or do you agree with Danya? And I tried to play the middle ground, but I agree with Danya completely that they're they're there. I tried to be for midichlorians, Eric. I really did try. But let
us
know on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Eric. Thanks for having me, guys, again.
It's good to have you back.
I know, right? You didn't say, and always with you. May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
There you go.
And with your chlorians.
And with your midichlorians, everybody.
Shut up, Eric.
All right.
Let's go have some brunch.
I wonder if midichlorians is why blood tastes like, you know, kind of like iron. Maybe that's it.
Oh, my God.